Hi there, I'm songwriter, screenwriter, and all-around Canadian Tim Burns, and you are listening to a podcast where nostalgia comes alive. It's Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show. Roll it!
Welcome to Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, the podcast where nostalgia comes alive. Since July of 2021, Jake and his friends have interviewed professionals in the worlds of acting, directing, writing, puppeteering, and many more. Who will they be chatting with in this week's interview? Find out in this Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show episode.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, where nostalgia comes alive. Happy here with us. Thank you for joining. Of course, I'm your host, Jake Duffenbaugh. With me today, of course, our co-hosts, Chris Bixby and Matt Bingo. How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Doing good. Hello, everyone. How are you, Jake?
I'm doing great. Matt, thank you for asking.
That is...
And... Yes, I know you're about to bring this up, Chris. Today's episode, it's been a bit since we last time have a guest co-host joining us in this episode. A guest co-host that will be joining us for today in this special episode, please welcome a good friend of ours. Please welcome Kev Messick. Happy to be here.
Hey, guys. Happy to be here. Thank you.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Delighted to have you here.
Delighted to have you here, Kev. So, Jake, who do we have for today?
Well, Chris, well, today's guest we have for today, he's a composer, musician, songwriter, photographer, a lot of things. A lot of you know, may know his work in the Big Idea franchise for recording lots of songs for, you know, everyone knows VeggieTales, including, of course, the classics. He's also a member of the band, A Good Bellows, and a lot more they will touch base on throughout his career later on. Please welcome Mr. Kurt Haneke. Happy to be here, Kurt.
Good to be here.
Delighted to have you.
Yes.
Nice to have you here.
Pleasure is ours.
Yes, absolutely. Happy to have you here. So now, to kick things off, we know who you are, but for those who haven't, could you tell our audience a bit about yourself and what you do?
Absolutely. Yep. I grew up in a musical family. I have two older brothers that are musicians. My parents were musicians. And so I always kind of grew up thinking I'm going to do music somehow. And I ended up, okay, here's a little relational thing. I directed a German band in high school for 2 years. And when you think about the opening, the theme song of VeggieTales is a polka. And so I was like, oh, I got this. I know how to do this because I kind of knew German music. Ended up getting my music degree as a teacher from college. I was a music teacher and a band director for a couple of years. I ended up, while doing that, getting involved in a really cool contemporary church in downtown Chicago in the Lincoln Park area. And a lot of just vibrant activity going on there, a lot of contemporary music, a lot of talent, a lot of artists. And lo and behold, the founding members of VeggieTales, Mike and Phil, and Lisa Vischer, who's Phil's wife, and some of the very first voice actors, Dan Anderson, who was Dad Asparagus, Kristen Blagan was the Laura the Carrot. All of them came out of this church, Park Community Church. And Phil had this idea for, you know, Phil was in computer animation, Mike was in video editing, but together they, I just think it's hilarious, in college they would get together, they were in a puppet troupe together. And but on the weekends, they would get together and just over the weekend force themselves to write a music video. So they'd write a music video, produce it, sing it, act it, all within a weekend. And so that's like that's where their creative craziness and genius, you know, it's just kind of what they've been doing for decades. So they were interested in trying to do this VeggieTales idea. They didn't have the budget to say, hey, let's, and they were unknowns at that point, you know, so they weren't able to go down to Nashville and say, hey, let's get a real producer. And so they asked me, because I was directing music at the church every week. I was doing sequencing. I was leading a band. I was doing all sorts of stuff.
Wow.
And I said, yeah, this sounds interesting. I have no idea what I'm getting myself into, but Phil and Mike, especially Phil, was such a vision caster. You could see from the beginning, there's two layers to Phil. He's this crazy Bob the Tomato, but he's this intense businessman that wants to make an impact on the world through you know, the Bible and faith. And so I was sold and I said, yeah, let's, you know, count me in. And so, you know, I got started on it that summer, which was, you know, that first episode came out in December of 93. So I was working on it that summer with them and played the tuba on the theme song, did the did the original arrangement for the theme song. So did that for most of the next 25 years as director of music. And since then, in these last 10 or 12, I've lost track years, I'm still doing very similar things. I've got a studio here at my house. I write music, score, composition, songs for a lot of different, often faith-based projects. I wrote the score for the Superbook series from CBN for 5 seasons. I'm currently writing the score and the music director for the Winged Feather Saga under Andrew Peterson and that book series. Done a bunch of other stuff. And currently Mike is working on, Mike Naraki and Steve Taylor have created the first season of the Dead Sea Squirrels. You heard that right. It's not the Scrolls, it's the Dead Sea Squirrels. Mm-hmm. And which is a hilarious faith-based animated series. And we're working on getting distribution for that this year, but the first season is already done. When that comes out, just keep your ears open, because if you like the sensibilities of VeggieTales, this comes from the writing of Larry the Cucumber. It has the same DNA. It feels similar, but it's a completely different story, completely different characters, completely different animation style. But I'm still working on the music and the score, and it's great to be back with him. And
nice.
And Phil and Mike,
yeah,
and
I've
I
read
are,
the
yeah
I've read the Dead Sea Squirrel books. They're fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, it sounds like it's really fun. Definitely looking forward to that.
We've had some people that are kind of in the know say, pull Mike's hand, like, I like this better than VeggieTales. So it's really creative. It's really good.
Nice. So kind of going back to like before you got into the music biz, like what was your childhood like?
Good childhood. My mom was a choir director in the Lutheran church and a church organist and a piano teacher. My dad played cello and sang in the choir. I grew up in a good Midwestern family. We camped a lot, you know, had a good, you know, nothing too crazy. I kind of stayed out of trouble for the most part. We moved to, that was in Wisconsin. We moved to Alabama when I was in junior high. And that's where I really found my core group of friends. Once I got into high school and high school band and kind of the nerds, I was a trumpet player. That was a big part of my life. And then, you know, just staying involved in the Lutheran church of my family, but then also all my friends were at the local Baptist church, were, you know, down in Alabama. They had a big music program, so I got involved in the youth music program there. So had a really good mixture of, I guess you could say, different denominations as I was learning more about my faith. And so I really appreciate that from my parents, and then just everything that I gathered from my friends and those influences. And so, you know, I'd say a pretty nerdy, uneventful childhood.
Yeah, you said you stayed out of trouble a lot. And I mean, who would have thought it? This nerdy kid into polka music would stay out of trouble, you know?
Right. I mean, I can't find any trouble even if I try.
Right.
Yeah.
So what about all that made you want to have a career doing music?
I had seen as I had mentioned, my whole family were musicians or teachers. Both my older brothers were music teachers at one point. I knew I wanted to go into music in about junior high. It was that, or either that or herpetology, which is the study of reptiles and amphibians. I had a turtle collection. I had turtles. Then I kind of, by junior high, I was like, yeah, I want to do something with music. And I was just very practical. I knew I wasn't good enough to be a studio musician or a symphony player. So I thought, you know, I'll be a music teacher. And get my degree for that, because I knew there would be work there. And I knew I could always still do all my other music. And that's basically exactly what happened. I was music teacher for several years and then transitioned over to working at the church. Actually, I didn't mention that before. I was a director of church music for 8 years, where I was kind of combining all these different skill sets, because I was a trumpet player, but I was a singer. I was dabbling in keyboards and synthesizers and sequencing. And I got to use all of those tools along with leading, you know, leading a choir and a band and leading worship and those sorts of things. So, yeah, it was just always kind of, yeah, I'm just going to do that. And I think I was always interested in arranging. I started arranging in junior high, just dabbling in it. And then as I was working at the church, there was a lot of opportunities to arrange. I never in a million years thought, oh, I'm going to be a songwriter and be a composer, write film scores and those sorts of things. It's just not something that back then there's no path for that. You just don't go to college and get a degree in film composition. And it's one of those fields where even if you did have that, it's such a weird thing to get into. So much of it has to do with knowing the right people and being in the right place at the right time and having a bunch of skills that all kind of are intertwined but might be different skills. So it never was a life goal of mine to write music for vegetables, but that door opened and I, you know, jumped at the opportunity.
Nice.
Very nice. So early on in your career, you got to teach general music in the Bahamas. What were those experiences like?
Somebody's been Wikipediaing me. Yeah. Well, that was, I came out of college mid-year, December, and there's just not a lot of teaching jobs open. And our college had a connection with a school in Grand Bahama, Freeport, Grand Bahama. And they said, hey, they're looking for a music teacher. And I was just crazy enough to say, hey, I'm not tied down to anything here. Why not? And so I was a general music teacher in Freeport, Grand Bahama for 6 months. It was an amazing experience. It wasn't exactly what I was cut out to do. I wasn't really set up to be an elementary music teacher. Ironically, now two of my three kids are elementary music teachers. So, they'll hear stories from my experience and that sort of stuff. But I mean, there's no doubt about it. It was a fantastic opportunity. I lived on a bay on the ocean, and I could ride my bike to the largest scuba dive center in the Bahamas. And I had a dive package. So I'd like go scuba diving every weekend or go snorkeling with friends on a catamaran. And it was pretty cool. But at the same time, I was ready to move on. You kind of get cabin fever because there's just not a lot of outside influences and stuff. So after six months, what happened is there was a job an opportunity that came up in Chicago as a band director. And I had always thought Chicago was the coolest city. And so suburbs of Chicago. So when that opportunity opened up, I was like, oh, that's exactly, right for me to get close to a big city like that. So, so I took that step.
That's awesome. So for many, many years, 25 years, you were, you worked for Big Idea as the music director and songwriter and all that. And you sort of touched on it at the beginning, but what was it like, when you first started working with them, meeting Phil, Mike, and Lisa?
Yes, it really started out. Phil, you think back to Where's God When I'm Scared?
Yes.
Phil Let's. Wrote that Classic. Was really mostly Love Phil's that. Writing. You think about some of those great songs. I am King Darius. I have a dream. Da 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 da. And we that contrapuntal weaving in and out. Phil had all that in his head. So at that point, I was really an arranger. Cool thing about Mike and Phil is they both have, neither of them are a classically trained musician. Phil is a little bit more. He can play some guitar. He can definitely play some keyboards, and he's a decent singer. But they have these amazing hooks that they come up with. So, the Hairbrush song. Oh, where is my hairbrush? Well, da, da, da,
da, da, da, another classic.
Yes.
That is what Mike came up with. That's basically that's all that Mike had, and the lyrics and the story.
Right.
Then I took that and crafted this little operetta around it. And actually, that's an interesting one. You know, granted, that was who knows which show that came off of.
Are You My Neighbor?
Yeah, it's show three, because show one was Water Buffalo Song, which was Phil's really one and only silly song by himself. Show two, we had trick question. What was the silly song for show two?
None.
Yeah, because we didn't know.
Forgive-O-Matic, sort of.
Well, yeah, it was the intermission little comedy bit. It was a commercial.
Yeah.
But at that point, we didn't know we were supposed to do silly songs every show until parents wrote in, where's the silly song? We're like, we didn't know we had to write one. And so then show three, Mike wrote a hairbrush song. That the interesting thing is I wrote all those little da 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 bum bum da 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 da. And it was Lisa in the studio that said, wait a minute, instead of Junior just going, why do you need a hairbrush? You don't have any hair. I think I could sing to what Kurt did. Why do you need a hairbrush? You don't have any hair. And I wasn't even in the studio on that day because I was still working at the church. So Lisa started crafting all these little lines between each of these choruses. So that one really was Mike and then myself and Lisa together writing that one. So all of that to say, back at the beginning, I was doing more arranging. Really on show one, Phil had written all that music and I was arranging it and tightening it up, making a song out of it and that sort of stuff. And then as we got further down the series, then as Mike started picking up silly songs, I would start co-writing those with him. He still, no doubt about it, he always had the nugget, he had the idea, he had the craziness. It was my task to say, okay, how do we tie this up in a good song? Or how do we, maybe he hasn't, I'm always looking for that hook, you know, and he has it in there twice. I'm like, no, let's repeat it again at the end and let's build a chorus, and now we need a bridge, and now let's come back to this. One of the classic examples that I like to tell is Cheeseburger, his Cheeseburger.
That's Mike one of my written, favorites.
Mike had written a different verse to it, and Lisa, his wife, who is Colombian, said, Mike, you can't use that verse because you're copying the theme song to a Spanish soap opera I've been watching. Mike is just a sponge that way. He picks up on things. And so, you know, we couldn't use that because it was already a song. So I rewrote the verses. He said, da 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 da, but you might da 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 da. And then we use his chorus. And then you take pieces like SUV, sports utility vehicle, just the way that builds. Mike knew it wanted to build, but he didn't know musically how we would make that happen. So that's where the fun challenges come in for me. Or for Yodeling Veterinarian of the Alps, you know, it starts with this like this vocal men's quartet that is very similar to something you'd hear in the 70s. There used to be these guys, vocal groups, folk guitar and singing. They said, I want it to start like that, but then I want it to zip over to a yodeling polka. And I'm like, well, nobody's ever done that before. So it's fun to take these just counterintuitive ideas that Mike will just come up with, not thinking about, will it even work musically? And then going, okay, how do I capture Mike's vision and make it into a, you know, a song that fits into, you know, a 2-minute song, a 3-minute song with a good start, middle and end and that sort of thing.
Nice.
Wonderful. So now I'm kind of curious, even though we kind of touched base a little tiny bit, but overall, are there any songs you wrote for VeggieTales that kind of like stick out as some of your favorites?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I really like Belly Button.
I think that's a funny one. That's a funny one.
Oh, great.
I just think that is, you know, we did such a fun job of poking fun at guy, you know, boys groups and boy bands. And I remember borrowing my, you know, at the time we had our daughter Gretchen, who was probably 3, and I borrowed her babysitter's boy band CDs to listen to all of them, because, you know, that's kind of where I'm the one going, okay, what makes a boy band sound like a boy band song? So I'm listening to the instruments used. I'm listening to the, you know, the tempo and the chord changes and the melody. I'm listening to how do the vocal parts interweave. So I'm really studying it. I'm not looking at this as, hey, we're just writing a kid's song. It's like, no, we're going to write a legit boy band song. Okay, here's philosophically, my role has been in a typical silly song. I write a very legit song. Hairbrush Song is a little opera.
Yes.
Endangered Love is a tango.
Yep.
Belly Button is a boy band song. So I'm writing a serious, legit song. Larry is singing it seriously and legitimately. And that's where the humor comes in, because we see the craziness of this that he doesn't even see. And then I'm trying to write not a children's song, but this fully produced tango or boy band song or classical music or polka that can stand alone as that style song. And I think, and I've over the years, I've heard people say that's what they appreciate about it. It's not just, you know, we won't mention names of any purple dinosaurs, but, you know, people will say, oh, I'm so glad it's not music like that. There's levels to it that me as a parent or as an adult can enjoy or dig into, or we catch things that we didn't hear earlier. Like any of the Christmas shows you watch, I probably slip in 20 Christmas carols into the score, you know, just in and out all over the place that, you know, those sorts of things. The beginning of is it David and the Giant Pickle, where he's starting with, he's the shepherd and the sheep are.
Yeah.
So that little theme, dun, da, da, as the sheep are jumping around, dum da da dum da da dum da dee dim da da ba ba bum ba bum, that is Bach's "Sheep May Safely Graze." Bum ba da dum ba da doo 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 bum ba da doo 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 ba da dum. So there might be, you know, 1 in 1,000 classically trained musicians that catch that reference, because there's sheep on the screen. I'm referencing Bach's "Sheep May Safely Graze." So I'm kind of doing that for myself just to make it interesting. And I know that my musical family, they'll get that. So I'm kind of like playing to them or those sorts of people.
And speaking of the sheep, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but we are speaking to the voice of sheep number 3 from A Very Veggie Christmas. Yes. Probably my favorite VeggieTales character.
Right, hold it. Let's see if I can. There we go.
Wow.
Wait, boy,
thank you. I mean
gotta have a drink after that. Warm me out.
There are times that you actually kind of like voice of like a couple like characters like just rarely. That's kind
of
cool.
I did a lot of background background, you know, group character voices, background vocal parts on a
right
part.
If it needs to,
you know,
like ADR.
Yeah, I mean, probably, because that's inevitably some kid asks, oh, are you a voice? And like, nope, sorry, kid. But my claim to fame is I am the tuba player on the theme song. And here is that tuba.
Right there. Wow.
Wow. That's now, awesome.
There's a little bit of trivia there. That is the second tuba. There's two theme songs. The first one we did, I borrowed a tuba from my old band.
Yep.
But then maybe 10, 12 years later, they updated and it's the same. I mean, it's a very similar theme song, but it's a little shorter, a little bit tighter arrangement. And when I re-recorded it, I used that tuba. So that's the one you hear all the time now.
Nice. That's great. Talk about the songs wise, there are lots of wonderful, you know, classics, you know, that, you know, listen so much. And of course, you already mentioned, you know, the Hairbrush Song and other things. but the, his cheeseburger got us bigger, of course. The very first show, and the War of Buffalo song. They're just so many wonderful, you know, songs. And I mean, you did an amazing job, you know, arranging and scoring and, you know, all those things. Kind of like,
I got one more little piece of trivia here talking about the tuba. Yeah. When we kind of shut down the big office and, you know, there were some layoffs and I stopped being full time, but then the next day I was working freelance. So I was still writing all the shows, but I bought a lot of the studio into my space. And so this microphone, which is still my main microphone, this is the first microphone that Mike and Phil bought 30 years ago that, I mean, every voice on every show for the first, I don't know, let's just say 10 shows came from this microphone. So I don't take it for granted that I'm, you know, getting to enjoy those sorts of things.
That's great. Since we're kind of like talking about, like, you know, what I just talked to you about, you know, me's a job, you know, arrangements, everything you've done will be used for VeggieTales. I know there are people out there in the VeggieTales fandom are kind of like still even wondering about this. I want to ask you, what was the kind of like scoring and arranging for the music kind of work, if that makes any sense?
Yes. So at the probably the most common way we were doing it is when I came on full time, I had my own little studio in our space. And, you know, it grew from, you know, a dozen people up to 150 people over time. And I would write, you know, Mike or Phil would say, okay, we're going to need a song for this space in the show. Because as they're writing the script, they know where they want to place a song and they will write the lyrics to that. And then it could be a couple notes of a theme. It could be a whole song. Anywhere from A to B there, they would then sit down with me and sing it to me. Hey, I'm kind of thinking about this, kind of thinking about that.
Right. Go, so that way they can have their ideas and you can just do the music.
Oh yeah. Cause then I start with that. And then, yeah, there's all sorts of permutations of, you know, I might say, well, what if you did this, or this just feels like the other song. What if you change this up? And there's plenty of times where I would try to change things up and Mike would say, nah, I kind of like what I started with better. And I go, okay. And later on I learned, you know what, that was the best. I learned to just trust Mike's intuition. Sometimes I would think, well, I'm the trained musician here, but I'm like, but Mike and Phil have such just an internal sense of just a silly little easy to remember hook. And that's what they need. And so then I come in and frame that with all these nice different shapes and colors and things. So we go back and forth and back and forth. And the nice thing when you're in the office together is I can just call them over. Hey, what'd you think of this? You know, these days when I'm writing in my own studio for whatever project, it's always like, okay, I wrote this. Now I'm going to bounce down an MP3 and email it to them. What do you think of this? And there's always, you know, I don't want to say wasted time, but it's so nice when you're in the same building. And hey, I just got this little idea for starters. What do you think? Instead of, in my mind, I've got this little idea for starters. Now I'm going to create a song. And then they come in at that point and go, no, I didn't like that idea. I'm like, okay, now I got to start from A again. So it was really creative just having everybody in the same space. That happened, you know, in Chicago mostly. First at the Clinton Avenue in downtown Chicago, we had a floor there. And then later on, we moved out to Lombard and we took over an old Woolworths in a mall. But just to have that and it's not just me, there were so many incredible artists just wandering the halls, you know, people from Disney and from other places like that. And people are just doodling. I have framed, actually, when I passed it, when I showed my hallway, Chuck Vollmer, one of my good friends who was a Disney artist, you know, we always had a meeting in the mornings and he would just doodle. And he was like, and he would use old paper grocery bags. So it gives us this real rough look and just pencils on grocery paper bags. And He just drew this picture because this was when we were here in Franklin, Tennessee. He drew this random picture of a Confederate soldier. And he was just going to like throw it away. I'm like, no, no, no. And I've got it framed because I'm like, if this is what somebody like Chuck Vollmer can do in a meeting and he's just going to throw away, you know, so that was part of the joy of this is just, you know, I was hanging out with non-musicians that are at the top of their game as artists and storytellers and all these other things. So yeah, just being in a creative environment like that, just going back and forth. Hey, what do you think of that? What do you think of this? Making changes and then, you know, then bouncing it down to go. Now, you know, these days, because we just came off of, you know, some people don't realize this, but TBN had us create 26 new episodes, two seasons worth of VeggieTales about 4 years ago. And unlike...
Yeah, on the VeggieTales show, as I was talking about. Yeah. So,
now, this is not Netflix doing Veggies in the House.
That
had right. new faces, new everything, and a lot of people were turned off by that. Now, granted, some people say, oh, my kids love that. That was their first introduction to VeggieTales, so
yeah.
I'm not knocking that. But I didn't have anything musically to do with that. A lot of us, creatively, they purposely, DreamWorks purposely brought in a fresh team to say, no, we want to try to spice it up. So TBN came in and said, we miss the old Veggies. Would you do a new season of Veggies? So it's classic Veggies, except on a countertop. They're now in an old theater. It's kind of like the Muppet Show where, you know, Bob takes over an old theater and he's got to produce a show each week. So, you know, it's the behind the scenes backstage. And then what do they put on the show? So, you know, we got to do that again. And, you know, these days with doing something like that, you know, we're doing it a little more remotely. We're doing it a little more quickly. But I don't think the creativity suffered because, you know, when the director or producer was saying, hey, we want it to sound like the classic VeggieTales shows, I'm like, I think I know how to do that. That's one thing I can do in my life is make something sound like classic VeggieTales. So I already knew the recipe. So I didn't have to rediscover anything at that point. It's like, nope, write what you know, which is talking vegetables.
Nice, nice. Wonderful. So in addition to like the episodes, you also got to compose for the VeggieTales films. We're talking Jonah and the Pirates Who Don't Do Anything. What was it like getting to work on the films?
That was incredible because, I mean, it's legitimate. Like, I'm writing 70 minutes of score that's going to be played by a 60 or 80 piece orchestra. And so we had a little more time to do that. I would, more specifically, just because it's fresher in my mind, but when we were doing Pirates Who Don't Do Anything and Mike was directing that, I would write a minute of score a day, have Mike come in and listen to it and approve it. And then I would kind of fill it out and arrange it. And then it would go to an orchestrator who would basically make sure all the parts got transferred to sheet music that then would be played by a live orchestra. And then some of the songs were done the same way. You know, there's some songs that feel like orchestral classical songs from Broadway or musical. Other songs we did more production, more pop production or rock, and occasionally we'd bring in another, you know, a name artist for some of those, you know, and that sort of thing. But, you know, just to be able to do that, and then it's like I felt like a legitimate composer because then we went to Seattle for the first one, recorded that with members of the Seattle Philharmonic, and then Pirates Who Don't Do Anything, we got to go to Prague, Czech Republic, spent 9 days there recording, and, you know, I got to, my daughter came along with me, and at night when we were done for the day, we'd wander around the city of Prague, just going and, you know, discovering things. But just to be able to sit and hear a full orchestra play your music is, yeah, I mean, it's amazing, you know, and it is a different process. You have to take into account how I'm not just writing this for myself. When I'm writing for myself, I mean, I can just pick up a trumpet and play a line and nobody has to read the music after that. I'm done. You know, if I'm doing it for this, like, okay, now I've got to set a tempo so there's a click, and I have to figure out what the melody sounds like so that the sheet music can be written for the trumpet player to eventually record it. So, but just to hear things come to life like that is amazing.
Speaking of the Pirates movie. Yeah. Speaking of the Pirates movie, another interesting piece from the collection. This is the film trailer on 35 millimeter film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Where'd you get that? Found it on eBay, actually. And it's got the Reliant K cover of the Pirates movie. Oh. Thing. And I love Reliant K so much. Like, nice. That's one of my favorite bands ever.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, you can really tell of his collection. He can have some things saying like, whoa, how did you get that?
Yeah,
well, I want to see,
yeah, his whole bookshelf back there. Is that all copies of videos and CDs, or what am I looking at?
I've got, okay. Yeah, I've got about 500 VeggieTales videos back there.
We didn't make 500. We didn't make 500, so you have multiple copies of each.
Quite a few copies
of
some of them.
Yeah.
And you have like the puppets up there too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the old puppets made in 1997 are up there. Latex ones.
I can still.
I didn't even know they made puppets. That's really cool. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember if those. I can literally feel the texture of Bob and Larry right now.
Yeah,
because it's a little bit sticky. It's a little cold and clammy. Mm. And it's probably by now degrading a little bit.
A little bit, yeah, like around the mouths.
Yeah. Well, and we talked about this before, but one of my things that I feel pretty good about is from our very first live stage show, which Michael Curry created. He was the Tony Award winning guy that did the Lion King live stage show. He did the first VeggieTales stage show for us because he really liked us so much. But that is one of the P's from that stage show.
Incredible. Wow.
Yeah.
And he's in great shape, except his what do you call the fur up there?
Yeah.
Hair, that is starting to degrade because that's just literally like foam. And that's, if I touch it, it's going to like disintegrate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's one of my, you know, one of a kind things that I have. I'm just looking around here to see if there's any much of anything else. But yeah, I should show you when we have a chance down my hallway. I'll show you some more veggie stuff.
Oh, for sure. I've got so much VeggieTales stuff. I can't even fit it all in this room. I've got around 700 items total.
I wish that I could go back and, because we had a little gift shop, you know, right in our, and not even a gift shop. It was a closet, but it had all of the stuff. And I, you know, I bought and acquired quite a few things, but, you know, there's more and more things that I was like, man, I wish I had thought to get this. You know, here's my, let's see, can I turn my picture around? I don't know if I can, but, you know, here's my little Pirates guys.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, and I've just,
nice.
Where do I have? There's my little veggie drum.
that's awesome.
Yeah, and I used to have the lights, the Bob and Larry lights, and that sort of stuff. Yeah, I've got several boxes of things in my garage that, you know, one of these days when the museum opens up, I'll dig that out. I used to be the one that collects, like I've got the like the very first advertisement that came out in a Christian magazine advertising VeggieTales.
Really? So the one with the toaster.
Yeah, yep.
Wow.
So I've got all of that sort of stuff sitting in boxes. I remember I remember going to Moody Bible Bookstore in Chicago and finding that magazine and opening that up. Because I mean, nobody knew who we were back then. So, and I, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a music director at a church, so to be able to open a magazine and see something that's published around the country was pretty stinking cool, you know?
Yeah. So, so now aside from the movies, what was it like composing for Larry Boy, the Cartoon Adventures?
Okay, so I did the Larry Boy shows, you know, the 3D. I didn't.
Yeah, for the actual, you know, VeggieTales series. Yeah. Yep. Those are awesome too.
I didn't write on the 2D Larry Boy Adventures. Mm-hmm. So I didn't write the score for the 2D cartoon versions of those. From what I remember. It's all a fog now. No, I didn't write for those. But you know, I wrote all the main, you know, Larry Boy and the Fib from Outer Space, which, you know, this shirt is the Art Bugatti bowling shirt. Art Bugatti's on the back there. Actually, yeah. I've got here, we'll go down the hallway here. We've got I'm upstairs, so I've got a hallway here just a stairwell that comes up here. So here it is. There's an actual
Bugatti
bowling plate.
Wow. Oh wow.
Ah, cool. Yep.
Kev, do you have that?
That's awesome.
I do not.
Okay, thank you. I've got you beat at something.
Yeah.
Here's an old picture that one of our artists drew. That was the staff.
Cool.
Oh, I've seen that. That is so
at that
dope.
Point.
That is so cool.
And that, for that one, they handed a guitar to me. There's me playing.
It has Bob and Larry in the bottom.
So there's, and then there's Mike, Phil at the top, and Mike here.
That's great.
Yeah. So those are, and this was one of my proud moments. At one point, yes. When Billboard tracked everything, we had the top two children's audio.
Wow.
At the same time, VeggieTunes and VeggieTunes 2. So I got that framed, and
that's awesome.
Nice.
That was pretty cool because technically we would have gold and platinum records for every video that we created.
Oh.
Wow. But we didn't take time to create all those. But that's what a gold record, which is for a video, so what do you call that? I don't know if it's a gold record or a gold what looks like. That's an official.
Wow.
Oh, but here's a we did have a there's my gold album from VeggieTunes, so mm-hmm. Pretty excited about that. Oh, and here's telling about Chuck Lawmer drawing this Confederate soldier.
Oh wow,
he did that in like 10 minutes in a staff meeting.
I love Chuck's work so much.
Original Larry Boy. There it is. The original Larry Boy, July 1999.
Wow.
Original poster from there. Wow. And then let me turn on this light. And then a Pirates.
Yep.
Poster
that is
signed,
awesome.
Wow.
Signed by everybody. So that was. You know, I was busy with that.
That's wonderful.
And then our producer got these made for all the people that worked on Pirates Who Don't Do Anything.
Nice.
And then here's when I left full time, one of our artists did an Andy Warhol version of Bob and Larry.
Ooh.
And then everybody signed it for me. Yeah.
Wow.
So so that's this is the sort of stuff. This is Lilo and Stitch. So one of our artists, I won't mention his name so he doesn't get arrested, but one of our Disney artists, these, you know, the artists would just, the storyboards that they didn't get used, they just throw them in the trash, and then they would go through each other's trash and collect the really cool stuff. So he and I bartered. So this is some hand-drawn storyboards for Lilo and Stitch movie.
Wow.
That came out of the garbage. But then this is the sort of, this was for Yodeling Veterinarian of the Alps.
I was wondering if you still had that.
Wow.
So cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I remember you mentioning that in the commentary.
Joe Sapulich, I believe, drew these. But this is our concept art for, you know, what are the characters going to look like? You know, and then up here we've got, you know, there's his nurse's outfit.
Wow.
And then Jody Nielsen, when we used to have our our newsletter, she'd do a piece of art. You know, there'd be a feature for each person each month, and she'd do an amazing you know, caricature of them.
Wow.
So that's,
that's for that's that.
That's cool. So, yeah, so that's some of the stuff that I still have on display that's that great. I enjoy.
Wow.
So, that's and really my studio, I've got it themed like a German pub. It's a little crazy in here. I mean, there's just instruments hanging everywhere because that way I just pick up instruments and play them. And I don't have to go get them out of a case and that sort of thing. So it feels very cluttered to some people. Feels very warm and inviting to others.
That's wonderful.
All right. So back to the interview.
Yes.
That was the tour.
Oh, that's wonderful. So I'm kind of curious. So like, of course, you know, amazing, wonderful films for us. So now, aside from the episodes, of course, you also contributed to the VeggieTales live shows, especially Live on Stage and Sing Yourself Silly, and many others too. Can you talk a bit about those?
Actually, we had Chris Davis did most of that production on those. I did, you know, some of the projects outside of the videos, you know, I was pretty involved in the Christmas CDs and all the compilations. And then I oversaw a lot of the other things. There was an Easter CD we did. There are some others. But some of the live shows, actually, I had very little to do with because I was always busy working on the next video or the next film. And we just didn't have time for that. Then me to jump over to this other project also. So actually, Chris Davis did a lot of those. He also did a lot of the, you know, Bob and Larry sing country tunes, sing pop tunes, sing Bible stories. Right. So he was very involved in those, you know, and he would come in and work with me on things. And he was, you know, he was hired freelance for that. But he's a Nashville guy here, did a great job on those. So actually, those live shows, I did see the opening show in Minneapolis.
Oh, wow.
And I remember going to some of them and helping with the final mix and that sort of stuff. But I didn't have as much. And then there was the show came to Nashville. I think it was the second tour, you know, because they did like two completely different tours. Then I remember going to see it. But yeah, I didn't have a lot to do with those, actually.
And that sort of leads into the next question I was going to ask about Chris Davis, because, you know, he did a lot of work for the sort of side VeggieTales projects, and I think did music for really. And he really nailed the sound of, you know, classic VeggieTales. Did you ever like sit down with him and sort of explain to him, you know, through what the sound is? Or
it was some of both. I mean, there were different times that we talked about styles, and he did score on a couple shows. Again, when I was busy on a film, he scored one of the Christmas shows I was just watching. And, you know, so part of it was, hey, listen to what we've already done and mimic that. And he's a good enough musician and producer, and he's done enough of this that he knows exactly what that means. He's got a whole, you know, hard drives full of sample libraries, just like I do. And so he understands the assignment, you know, so to speak. And then, yeah, there were times that we would work together on trying to nail down ideas. And there were some of the albums that he did, I would come in and, you know, add some arrangements, you know, oh, here's a live brass section on a tune, and here's this or that. And so, yeah, there'd be some working together on that.
Nice.
That's wonderful. Of course, I wanted to ask you, because I feel like, you know, a lot of, you know, VeggieTales fans especially wondering, like, would you like have you ever like think that VeggieTales can like still has a huge following after all these years?
Yeah, we're definitely finding out that it kind of never dies. It's like parents that, I mean, to think, I mean, because we started 30 years ago, and so
like those people that, that's crazy.
Those people that grew up on it literally are having their children that they're introducing to VeggieTales now.
Yeah, and it's just so heartwarming.
And it's fun to see, because, yeah, you don't know what sort of legs it's going to have. And they call that an evergreen project because it just keeps on going. But, you know, some little tidbits. I just had my kids threw me a 60th birthday party back in January. And our German band played for it, Good Bellows. And of course, Mike and a bunch of the Big Idea folks were there. And so since we do the VeggieTales theme song, well, okay, here's an example. I'm in a German band. I didn't think, oh, we need to add the VeggieTales theme song because people are going to want that. I'm carrying around a two.
I mean, you and the rest did, you know, just for fun. You just want to have a fun project. Well, but then, you know.
Yeah. Here's the funny thing. I'm carrying around a tuba in Lederhosen, and I had multiple times, I'd say teenagers, just yell out VeggieTales. And they don't even know who I am. And they see the tuba.
Right?
Yeah.
They don't even know who I am. They see the tuba and we're a goofy looking German band and they just go VeggieTales.
And then they're like, oh my gosh, VeggieTales.
And we said, I think we need to do...
It has a whole like meme, like where if someone's like dancing to to other song, then someone just cover, just put VeggieTales theme on there. That's how on beat.
I think the first time somebody yelled that out, I think we actually did the song just off the tops of our heads and, you know, kind of crashed through it. I mean, I, of course, know the tuba part, but the other guys didn't know all the other parts. But then we decided, you know, let's put it into our show. And as soon as I start the tuba part, bump, 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 there's somebody cheers in the audience because they know what's coming. And they don't know, we haven't introduced me yet, so they still don't know the connection. And so it's fun because then after the show, after the song is done, one of our other guys says, well, what you might not know is the actual tuba player and co-writer of that song is our own Kurt Heineke. And then, so here's the crazy thing when you talk about popularity. So the German band, we did the VeggieTales theme song at my birthday party. And I called Mike up. Wow. Hey, Mike, come up and sing it with us. And he sang it. And my daughter got a videotape of it. And of course, now think about this. Mike never sings the theme song in the show because he's playing tuba because he's Larry. So on the video feed, because we hadn't practiced it, I hadn't even told him we were going to do it. He misses one or two lines, and it's just so funny because like Larry the Cucumber is missing lines on the VeggieTales theme song. So my daughter posted that on her Instagram account, and this was in January, and it just hit a million views.
Wow. I saw that too. That was so great.
Wow. Yeah. And you know, there's, you know, whatever, thousands and tens of thousands likes and comments. And so it still lives on, and it's wonderful. It's neat to see that happening. And I'm very honored to be a part of that legacy. Cause I know that, you know, I go and speak at a college campus and more than once some geeky college kid comes up and goes, I'm playing tuba because of Larry the Cucumber.
Oh, you know?
And
that's great.
So I know that is a legacy I'll have for the rest of my life, which is awesome. That's just something that, you know, I feel very honored to be a part of, and I always enjoy, you know, talking about it and talking to people like you that don't have a life and you're still stuck on VeggieTales. And
I mean, VeggieTales.
Sadly true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, VeggieTales is kind of, you know, such a simple, special show.
Yeah.
I mean, not just for, you know, of course, you know, the show was kind of, you know, was all, you know, Christian and all, but it was more so different that it makes, like, you know, the characters, you know, kind of like that, like, were there too. You know, that Bob and Larry just want to talk to the camera.
Yes.
That feels like, you know, we're there too. You know, we're just part of adventure or something.
Well, you know, a couple, you know, thoughts about that. You know, VeggieTales came out. We were the first computer animated series ever produced in the country. We came out a couple of years before Toy Story. So there's that, you know, just something fresh like that. You've got Mike and Phil who never wrote, they didn't think of writing kids stuff. They said, what's going to make us laugh? Oh, let's put in some Monty Python humor. Let's put in a little bit of irreverence. Let's poke some fun at some things. And so then all of a sudden these adults go, oh my gosh, I get it. I can't believe they were joking about that. Or, you know, it's like two levels of humor. Mike has always said that the most successful silly songs have a childlike humor to them, but they're dealing with an adult issue, angst that adults have about something. Like the SUV song, it's saying, why do you need a sports utility vehicle when you're just going to the grocery store to get a dozen eggs? The irony of that, you know? So all of that, and then the simple shapes and the simple music, we actually found a lot of special needs kids, you know, or people with speech impediments or, you know, this and that, that just latched onto Bob and Larry because we thought, okay, they're simple, round, brightly colored shapes, and, you know, they're simple to digest and take in. And so, yeah, all around. And then you get the silly songs that outside of your Christian friends, everybody's hearing about them. Oh, you gotta, you know, that another thing. It's like, hey, let's do a silly song about absolutely nothing related to the show. Doesn't have to have any sort of spiritual theme to it. You know, let's just make up a silly song. And you go, well, how's that gonna, you know, reach people for God? And you go, well, pretty cool when, you know, kids are sharing it with their neighbors and their neighbors are so like, oh, this is so fun. This is amazing. I don't feel like I'm being preached at. I'm not being hit over the head with what I should believe. And it just opens it up to so many people. And especially in today's world where there's so many divisions in, you know, between religions and politics and so many things and so much infighting. It's like, yeah, I just miss those good old VeggieTales days.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
exactly. So before we were kind of like, moving forward into other things that you've done for your career, like Kev, is there a thing you want to share to him?
Oh yeah. This just came in the other day. Hold on just a second. I've got to take my earbuds out to get to it.
I'm following you. I'm going to get some water here while we're chatting.
Okay.
No worries.
Behind me as we walk back is my wall of Irish whistles and Native American flutes and ethnic flutes that I use.
Oh.
I'm actually on 13 different Disney scores for theme park stuff like parades and Fantasmic show, playing a bunch of those whistles.
Oh, Fantasmic's fun.
Oh, yeah. Fantasmic. Yes. Love that.
A lot of times in a parade, if you hear the ba da ba 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 da ba ba da ba ba da ba 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 da ba ba.
It's all good.
Yeah, something Jake wanted me to show was this CD that just came in today. I got Veggie Rocks finally.
Oh, that's awesome.
And
it has all the groups.
Also got cover. This poster for it. This
sweet
poster that folds out.
And
of course, oh, Reliant K, my beloved.
And then there's Rebecca St. James down at the bottom.
Yeah.
And here's a cool thing, how this all comes full circle. She sang the theme song on it, and it's so funny. Don't tell Rebecca I said this. But when we got the CD to listen to everything, she was the only one that thought, well, that was, she kind of sang, if you like to, it's almost like she didn't quite get the joke in it. It was like, ooh, that almost too seriously. Did I say that about Rebecca? Because I love Rebecca. My daughter and I always used to go to her shows. Again, 25 years ago. And now her younger brothers just made the Unsung Hero movie, who, you know, they are for King and Country. And I do photography on the side. And I just photographed that movie premiere this week. And I just got to say hi to the whole family because I know all of them now.
Awesome. Wow.
So it's just cool. So cool to see stuff like this. It's really a small world when you get down to it, you know, down in Nashville.
Absolutely.
There's connections everywhere that everybody knows. That's why it's fun being down here. And I love her, Rebecca St. James.
Yeah. And her and Easter Carol singing Hope's song.
Oh, I mean,
that's always like one of the most touching moments in
all
of
it. She did an amazing job on that. That was an awesome song for me to help. That was weird because I think I co-wrote that one, but I didn't do the production because Rebecca's team wanted their guy to do the production. It's got Rebecca. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure it sounds Sandra, I could have done as good of a job, but I love her singing on that. Yeah, yeah. She sounds great on it.
Nice. So now moving on from VeggieTales, you also composed for another Big Idea production, which I also watched a lot as a kid, 3-2-1 Penguins.
Penguins!
Yes. Yeah, so what was it like working on that?
I had so much fun on Penguins. It was challenging because we were so busy trying to do two different shows at the same time, but it was really rewarding to completely create a different sound. Actually, two different sounds, because we had Ron Smith was directing it, and he had this vision of, remember the Little Rascals TV show?
There was
a band that played like Little Rascals music, and it was this little rinky dinky ding yicky dinky dinky ding on all these acoustic instruments. And he said, that's what I want Grandmom's cottage to sound like. So we've got like a 10-piece little orchestra playing that. And then you get to space and the Penguins, you get the, you get the surf, rockabilly, 50s, rock and roll, along with spacey synthesizers. So two completely different sounds that are completely different than VeggieTales. So it was a lot of fun to write and just kind of stretch. And I still have, I don't have any Penguins posters up right now, but my one thing that I still hang proudly is the Penguins premiere was at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. And so I got to go there for the day and I had to get my ID taken for the day. When is that? 2000. So there's my ID. There's my Penguins tag that I had to wear there, and my wife. And then,
cool.
And then here's my little lanyard. And then I got my little souvenir Saturn V rocket while I was down there. So I have those hanging here because that was just such a cool trip. It's like, I'm going to Kennedy Space Center. And the viewing was in this room that has the mock-up of the Apollo 11 on the moon. And then there's a screen behind it. Yeah. So, you know, oh, there's your poster. Oh, yes, that was from New Orleans, CBA, Christian Booksellers Convention. And the fact that we were premiering both of those at the same convention and had a big party. And who was the band there? Was it... Might have been Reliant K. It might have been one of the other ones.
It was Salvador.
Salvador, that's what it was. Yeah, we hired them for the premiere party.
Yeah,
back in the day when, you know, CBA, Christian Booksellers Convention Association was huge. You know, there were mom and pop Christian bookstores around the country. Part of the success of us was because back then you had us on VHS, you had Barney. And there wasn't really much else.
Yeah.
You know, now you've got video games and computer games and 150 cable channels and streaming.
Yeah.
So it's very hard. It's very hard. I mean, it's hard to believe in today's world that we were coming out with two, at the most, three episodes a year. And people were sitting around waiting for those and they'd have big watch parties.
Yeah.
That would never happen these days. Like, where's my full season released overnight, you know, so you can binge watch it. And so it's really hard these days with anything to say, how do I successfully create a franchise that is good but successful and makes money? There's just so many options out there that it's very hard to do.
I'm sorry to be obnoxious and keep pulling, you know, random collection things out.
No worries, but,
speaking of Penguins, and I'm going to try not to show my address here, but Tim Hodge sent me this.
Oh, Tim's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm looking at a birthday card that Tim hand drew for me, because he's just that kind of guy, and he's an amazing artist.
Oh, that's so cool. I love Tim.
He's so talented.
That's nice.
He's a great guy. We've been friends for decades.
Nice.
Oh, that's great. So now you also scored five seasons of the CBN series Superbook. which yes. I kind of mentioned in your introduction. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Tom Bancroft, who came from Disney and was one of our animators, was key to helping develop Superbook, and he was one of the ones that suggested, hey, you should consider Kurt writing the score for this. And they're kind of like, well, isn't he the VeggieTales guy that does like tuba and accordion, you know, which is, you know, that's not the last time that I've been accused of that. And they're like, no, trust me, you know, he does bigger stuff too. Look at, you know, listen to the movies and that sort of stuff. So I got involved in CBN and did Superbook, which is very exciting. First of all, it was a wonderful timing because it's when things started slowing down at VeggieTales, and I took on Superbook, and those five seasons, that was 11 years that I worked on it. Not full time, but good chunks of 11 years. And, you know, again, it was probably the first series that came out after VeggieTales that I felt like, okay, this is really well done. They actually have some budget. They can actually do some study and design work and research and do a really good job on this. And it's completely different, absolutely as far from VeggieTales as you can get. It's legit storytelling Bible stories. But the cool thing is, you think about, it's got, you know, a talking robot, Gizmo, and it's got time travel through a Bible, and it's got animation. The reason for that is the very, you know, and some people don't realize this, but there was a Superbook series back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And it was made by the same animation company that did Speed Racer. So it's got that real kind of fast, jerky 2D right. animation. Yeah. But the reason they did that is they CBN was trying to figure out some sort of children's entertainment that would help introduce the Japanese culture to the Bible and Bible stories. And they said, what do kids in Japanese culture like? They like time travel, they like robots, and they like animation. And so they tied those together into this amazing storyline so that now these kids are modern day kids, and they time travel back into time to experience a Bible story firsthand. And Gizmo, this robot, he's kind of comedic, he's kind of humorous, but he's part of the narration and helps them travel through time to experience these Bible stories and then see how it relates to their experience today. They're dealing with some issue today, and that helps them. So, you know, because for me, that was really heavy duty scoring. It's like, no, this has to sound like a big film score. Very dramatic moments, Old Testament stories that are very big, epic. And so, you know, I really had to concentrate on my big sound libraries and, you know, pulling out I used a lot of trumpet, a lot of my whistles, you know, because a lot of Irish whistles and ethnic flutes, they sound very Middle Eastern. So I would use a lot of these live instruments on top of all my layers of scoring. So that was very cool to be involved in that. And there's a chance that there might be some future stuff with CBN.
Ooh,
cool.
We'll see. We're looking forward to awesome. That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But those are, yeah, CBN, those are all available either on the CBN app or streaming through CBN. I don't know if they're on any other, you know, network sort of streaming at this point, but absolutely, you can look up CBN Superbook and you'll figure out a way to see, because there's, you know, like we said, five seasons, 13 episodes each. So,
yeah,
it covers a whole lot of Bible stories.
Nice. So,
awesome.
You also worked on projects for Sesame Workshop and Blizzard Entertainment. Can you talk about your work with them?
Yeah, those were, I've got a friend who works at Blizzard Entertainment, which is one of the largest gaming companies in the world. And we made a connection, and they gave me the opportunity to write, not for a video game, but for one of the projects that was like, okay, we're going to introduce some new characters online, on YouTube, that are tied in with one of our stories. And so they let me write some for that, and it was a great experience. In the end, they went a different route. So actually, I don't think you'll hear I can't point you to my music, because I don't know if it ended up appearing anywhere. But I got to, I've toured the toured their studios out in California. Very cool. You know, met with their main film composer and music guy. So that was a really cool experience. Sesame Workshop is the team that made Sesame Street. I wrote on a pilot, animated a story that was a pilot for an animated series there. Kind of, that was something that they were doing. I don't remember if that was something they were going to pitch to somebody and then hopefully get it picked up. But I worked with an animation company here in Nashville on that. Again, it's kind of a one-off. It's like one thing I did, but it's, you know, even something like that is really exciting because it's top of the line when it comes to expectations and budget and the time they have to work with it and really setting the bar high. And so I really have to push myself. And anytime you do that for a new company, you know, they're looking for a completely different sound maybe than what I've done with these other projects. So it's always a good way to stretch myself.
Nice.
Very nice. So you also wrote songs and score for the video series Dead Sea Squirrels with Mike Naoraki. What was it like working on him with that?
Well, okay, so this, keep your ears open because nothing's been, I mean, there's been trailers and there's been some things released, but that is hopefully something that we get distributed this year and you'll have a chance to, whether it's stream it or buy it or download it. It's a hilarious, and I'm not just saying that, but it's just Mike writing like Mike writes, which is great. It's multi-layered. It's about a the synopsis is there's an archaeological family who is studying, they're finding, you know, the scrolls that were in the caves around the Dead Sea. And so the dad is there studying those, and his son, the fifth grade son, is off lurking in the caves by himself and discovers two petrified squirrels like standing in one of the caves, and he thinks that's so cool. So he sneaks them home in his backpack back to the United States. Well, they're stinking up his backpack, and because they're petrified, so he sets them on his shelf in front of his window. He opens his bedroom window to get some fresh air. And that night, a big storm comes in, and it gets the squirrels wet. Well, they weren't petrified. They were dehydrated because they were at the Dead Sea. It's so salty. Well, the water from the rain rehydrates them. They come back to life. And now he has two talking squirrels hiding in his bedroom. And it turns out they've been petrified since Jesus's time. They actually were alive at the time of Jesus. So he's trying to keep them hidden from his family, and he, you know, carries them around in his backpack. And he's dealing with fifth grade problems at school. And they're telling him, well, you know, when we heard Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount, here's what he said about turning the other cheek or whatever. So he's kind of learning lessons that way. But then the plot thickens because they're talking squirrels, somebody wants to kidnap them and because they're unique and bring them back to Israel and Jerusalem. And they do, they get taken back. And so now they're on a manhunt or a squirrel hunt to find these squirrels again. So they're traveling around Israel trying to find the squirrels. And in the meantime, they're visiting different sites where Jesus had his ministry. So we're hearing, we're seeing and hearing about, oh, here we're at the Dead Sea and this is what happened here. But it's all comical. It's just like vegetables saying, hey, we're going to tell Bible stories with talking vegetables that have no clothes or arms or legs. And you go, yeah, that doesn't make sense. Same thing here. Hey, we're going to introduce you to the Bible through two talking squirrels that lived during Jesus's time. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. Exactly. It's very funny. It's just really creative humor. And so, yeah, we've got 13 episodes written. The cool thing is, Steve Taylor is the executive producer, co-executive producer with Mike. He was a huge Christian music star, whatever you want to say, artist, you know, back 20, 30 years ago. And he's still plugged into that whole industry. So we've got a bunch of Christian artists that are speaking some of the roles. and you'll know a bunch of them. And I'm not going to mention who they are because I don't even know if I can. But, you know, getting to work with, you know, people like Matthew West, who I can't mention his name, but, you know, I got to work with Matthew West on one of the parts, and Mac Powell from Third Day, and I won't mention any other names, but, you know, names like that that are on this series, and it's just, it's going to be a hoot when it comes out. So keep your eyes peeled and support us. And then, yeah, I got to write
looking forward to it.
Both, you know, I wrote all the score, and then I wrote half the songs. Again, every show has a really funny song in it. I wrote half the songs with Mike, and then Steve Taylor wrote half the songs with us also. So, I mean, it's just really cool. It's like I got to write with Steve Taylor and write for people like Matthew West and, you know, get to write with, work with Mike again. It just feels great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I'm happy for Mike, you know, one of those things that he's doing now, of course, you know, after his days on Veggies, now, you know, doing Dead Sea Scrolls, you know, I think that's great. I'm very, very looking forward to the series whenever it drops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, you're also in the Good Bellows, the polka band. How did that sort of come about?
I wouldn't put it at the same level of all these other things we've talked about. But
the worst band in Nashville, as I've
yes,
heard.
Yes, W-U-R-S-T.
Yeah,
we pretty much, because we all started it, it's four of us that are all friends of mine. And it's like, what are we thinking? But, you know, it's tuba, accordion, clarinet, banjo. But then all of us sing and all of us play two or three instruments. So it's just this hodgepodge of the misfit instruments of the band. And so we just started that a couple of years ago. I've got a German background. I've played in German bands before. And we just started having fun with it. And I probably the most fun we have is we do stuff like we'll do a German polka, but then we'll break right into YMCA, Young Men.
And that's wonderful.
Yeah. And so we do, and then we do a couple Beatles tunes, but we do them in a German band style, which nobody's ever heard before.
Wow.
So 40% of our songs aren't even German songs. we do a lot of classics, you know, standards like Country Roads and Rocky Top and, you know, and the funny thing is we just played last month. We opened for David Phelps, who is like, Gaither used to be in the Gaither group, one of the world's best tenors. He's got a farm in this area and he does a couple concerts there every year. I still haven't figured out how he heard of us. Like, you realize you're hiring a German band to open for you, but the crowd loved it because they didn't know what to expect. We walk out in Lederhosen, and they're like, what is this? And then we break into a Beatles tune, you know, and then we do Veggie Tales and they're going crazy. So, and then this weekend, we just did a big German club up in Louisville, Kentucky. And again, they just ate it up because, you know, when you're just playing a standard polka and then you immediately turn right around and do Rocky Top and Green Acres and YMCA and celebrate good times, come out and dutton, dutton, you know, with the tuba, it's just kind of crazy. So we're having fun with it. It's I'm not going to retire from my, you know, all the money I'm making as a German band member, but it's a good way to, again, stay out of trouble, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. So, of course, you know, over the years, you know, aside from, you know, working in the music field, you also have a career in photography. How did that come into play?
Yeah, you know, I've always kind of had a interest in photography. I've always enjoyed it. And it was probably in the last 15 years that about 20 years ago, I started photographing some air shows up in Chicago. And feel free to, if you want to post my website anywhere there, khstudios.biz, as in Kurt Heineke Studios.biz, B-I-Z. I've got a lot of photos up there. Just fell in love with photography. And then over time, I was like, you know what? Actually, the way it kind of happened was started moving down here to Nashville, I knew so many artists, and I just can't say, hey, can I photograph your concert? Sure. And then, you know, I got some pretty good photographs out of them, and then would give them to the artist. And then the door would open. They're like, man, we love those so much. Could you come back and we'll pay you next time? You know, and so I started photographing, you know, a lot of top Christian artists and some country artists, and then kind of built up a portfolio and just kind of word spreads. And then it just picked up from there. And then I just, you know, I sought out somebody that was a wedding photographer and learned wedding photography from him. And
that's wonderful.
And now I shoot with TBN, which is Trinity Broadcasting Network, and almost every Dove Award or Kayla Fan Award, I'm one of the photographers there. And I just photographed the King and Country, their movie premiere, Unsung Hero. And the fun thing for me is that I know all these guys anyways, just from being in the industry. So it's just another fun way to connect with friends and acquaintances and offer something as a photographer that they need. You know, they need pictures from their concerts or from their events and all those sorts of things. So it's been a fun, I mean, I want to say a side project, but it's some years it's 30 to 40% of my income. So it really, as a freelancer, even though you'd think, oh, I'm set, you know, it's like, no, you know, it's, you know, VeggieTales was hugely successful, but it's not like, ooh, I'm, you know, I'm a millionaire from that. So I'm like the next guy looking for the next job. And there's a lot of freelancers down here, which is cool because we all can kind of work together and commiserate together about, you know, what it's like to be a freelancer. You don't know where your next job's coming from. And so photography has been a great balance to the music side for me.
Nice. And so in addition to composition and photography, you've also gone to various colleges talking about the music industry. What's that like?
Yeah, I there was one year when I was writing on Superbook that we had a slower year, and I was like, I need to do something more. And I decided, because I've got an educational background and I enjoy talking to kids about music, I thought, you know what? What if I just reach out to a lot of private colleges in the country? Not a lot. I mean, you know, a couple dozen. And there were quite a few that, you know, especially in the middle of South Dakota. You know, here in Nashville, it's like, oh, you can go experience music all around you. You know, if there's a college in South Dakota that's teaching composition and film scoring, I was able to walk into there and spend a day with them and say, this is what it's really like. Here's the things you need to be ready for, and here's what you didn't even think about. And I love doing that. So I love that opportunity. I've been so busy lately, I haven't been able to do it. But this next year, I've thought about trying to do it some more. My wife and I want to start. My goal is to buy a travel trailer, set up a little workstation in it so I can do a little writing and go tour around the country a little bit and visit some family that's in other parts of the country. And I thought, ooh, if I'm in a different state, I should reach out to the schools there and just say, hey, I'm in your area. You want me to come speak to you, you know, speak to your kids? So I love doing that. It's part of me, the teacher part of me that I used to get to do more of that I enjoy doing.
Nice.
Very cool. So as we're getting close to wrapping up here, can you share any projects that you're currently working on that you're allowed to share, of course?
Let's see. Yeah, I can. If you've seen the movie Jesus Revolution, that tells the story of Greg Laurie, the pastor in California, pastor and evangelist, who was always doodling and making drawings of, you know, his surf buddies and a character that, well, he is bringing some of those characters to life, and he's actually creating a little animated series, and he just released his first like 5 or 7 minute show about that, and it's called I'm gonna embarrass myself, Ben Born Again. And then he's got his dog, his little yellow dog.
I saw an ad for that the other day, actually.
Yeah. So that I'm actually writing the score on that. And it's been a ton of fun because Ben, Born Again, and Yellow Dog. Been a ton of fun because he's got this like surf California Beach Boys mentality for, yeah, I want it just to be fun and kind of feel like, you know, hippies and surf and stuff. So yeah, I've got a, like, here's one of the cool things about living in Nashville that I enjoy. I don't play guitar, so that's one of the instruments that I can't play. So we go, well, we need somebody going ding 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 ding. So one of my buddies goes to my church, and he's the guitarist for Toby Mac. And
oh, wow.
And so when he's not on the road, he records those guitar parts for me. And so we get to work on that together. So that's a little project I'm working on right now. I'm also working, actually, we haven't, not that we're going to spend a bunch of time on it, but Andrew Peterson's Wing Feather Saga. I've been working on that the last 3 years. And we just finished season 2. And we're actually working on getting funding for season 3. But season 2 literally is releasing right now. And so that's been awesome because I'm working with a couple other, working with Andrew Peterson, who's an incredible songwriter, working with this incredible kind of alternative bluegrass group called Arcadian Wild. Because they write some of the songs. I write some of the score. We work together. We collaborate. Ben Shive is on it. There's an incredible producer. He's Andrew's producer. So that's been really fun because it's, again, it's this new mixture of sounds that we're trying to blend together that we've never done before and create this real fresh sound for Wing Feather series. So that's the big one out right now that you can go and watch right now. And that's a little more intense. That's not for the youngest of the VeggieTales crowd, but it's, you know, probably middle school kids are getting into it. It's a lot more Tolkien, C.S. Lewis, grand stories of good and evil, families versus, you know, oppression and those sorts of things. So it's got some really cool stuff and some pretty intense stuff, but kids are loving it.
Nice.
That's wonderful. Nice. That's good to hear.
Nice. So the last question that our guest co-host here, Kev, is going to ask is a question we ask all of our guests at the end. Go ahead, Kev.
Yeah, so this podcast being called Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show, what do you, when you think of nostalgia, what do you think of, or how would you define the word nostalgia?
Oh, nostalgia, well, obviously it's bringing back old memories. You know, for me, I'd say that means growing up in elementary school in Wisconsin with my two older brothers and my parents when all of us were, you know, they hadn't left for college yet. And, you know, there's things like camping trips. There's things like Christmases spent together that are the kind of the definitive happy memories of childhood when, you know, all was right in the world. And I know that, you know, not every kid, not every person can say that because my family situation was different than others. But that's definitely nostalgic, you know, gatherings like that. Ironically, you know, we would, German background, we would sing German Christmas carols around the piano on Christmas Eve, which I didn't know what any of that meant. But, you know, if you listen to the VeggieTales' first Christmas CD, you've got songs like Ring Little Bells, Kling, Glöckchen, Klingeling.
Yeah, and the VeggieTales did some like a Christmas video. It's like the Christmas Star. Love that one too.
So that's a song that's nostalgic.
I mean, I know a lot of VeggieTales fans will. I mean, I know a lot of VeggieTales fans will probably watch that V even just for a Christmas tradition. Seriously. Yeah.
So yeah, and now, you know, now we've got three grown kids and a grandson and a grandchild on the way, and now I'm thinking of, okay, what can I do for my kids and my grandkids to, you know, create lasting memories, you know, and that sort of stuff. I mean, hopefully I've already done it with my kids, but now that you know, we're getting grandkids, it's like, ooh, okay, I want to take them camping because those were some of my best memories and those sorts of things, because I remember that from my childhood. And that's good nostalgia for me. And, you know, I want to create the same memories for my grandkids and kids.
That's wrong.
Nice. Great words to end on.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, Kurt, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. This is a blast.
Yeah,
thank
cool.
you so
yes.
much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank once you get much. It edited or whatever, send me a link so I can
absolutely.
Watch it
I will
and post it on my website or whatever.
So. Thank you very much, Kurt. It means a lot.
This was cool. Thanks for the memories. Thanks for taking me back. And
Of course.
And, yeah, and
pleasure. Thank you.
Give me a shout if you're in Nashville and all.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And definitely. Of course, Dan, thank you so much for what you've done over the years. Thank you so much, you know, for taking the time to chat with us for the show. Of what you've done, your involvement with a big idea, especially VeggieTales and all the things you've done. For what you've done, it's just absolutely amazing. I know that so many people in the VeggieTales fan will say the same thing. So thank you very much for what you've done. And I cannot wait for what's next in store and cannot looking forward of what you're doing now whenever it's released, and keep up the great work. What are you doing now?
Awesome. Thank you. Good to meet all of you.
Yeah, it's good to meet you too.
Thank you. It means a lot.
I know we'll bump into each other again. So
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, sure.
All right.
Absolutely.
Remember, we God do. Made you special. He loves you very much.
Goodbye. Yes.
Very much, Kurt.
Goodbye.
Yes. Great word said on. Keep in touch.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. It's goodbye from us. Wow. We absolutely enjoyed our time with Kurt Heinicke. His website and social media will be in the description down below for people to connect. And Kev,
so
thank
check
you
so out
much.
Whatever other things. That,
yeah, thank you for having
Kurt's
me
doing.
On.
Yeah, yes. It's such a pleasure having you, Kev. You know, yes, it's such amazing to have you as a guest co-host. It's been a bit. We last time have a guest co-host. I think for you for this particular episode, I think it's great. For this episode, so thank you so much for you.
Well, I appreciate
this,
it,
Kev.
Yes, keep on the lookout for more wonderful interviews coming your way. And as always, what do we say, Jake?
Keep nostalgia alive. Take care, everyone. See you next time. Take care.
Bye.
See ya. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to another wonderful Jake's Happy Nostalgia Show interview. Be sure to follow Jake and the crew on social media and stream the show wherever you find your favorite podcasts. And as always, remember to keep nostalgia alive. Bye bye.